Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, writer in many genres, Linda Hutzel-Manning. So Linda, you describe this novella as being an example of surrealist writing. What is this? And can you describe this genre for us?
It is inserting the impossible into the possible. And I did do some research. I got all excited, actually, looking at surreal books, and they go way back in history. You know, Kafka's Metamorphoses, Edgar Allan Poe, short stories, Salvador Dali, the play Waiting for Godot. I haven't got the author for that, but I remember seeing it once. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, The 100 Years of Solitude, and Alice in Wonderland. That really pleased me that it was listed. And Kurt Vonnegut, Slaughterhouse-Five. And there's hundreds of them, and current ones as well. And one of the things, I think Felicity mentioned to me a while ago, she mentioned magic realism. And I think magic realism tends to be on the brighter side, and surreal writing tends to be on the darker side. I guess this qualifies as as being on the darker side.
Linda, we've been talking about your latest book as a novella. Other than being shorter than a novel, what are other characteristics of a good novella?
Well, I guess it's the characteristics of any piece of writing that might be considered good. I mean, you have to have strong characters, and I tend to have quite a bit of dialogue, more than some people do, because I guess of my playwriting background as well. And dialogue's very easy for me. And I know when I taught creative writing, a lot of people found writing dialogue extremely difficult. And they would write really stiff dialogue. And I keep saying, just write what this, the way you talk. You know, it's not difficult. You just, and you have to have, you know, a rise in the tension and probably a crisis and then a denouement, I guess. Just the regular short story or novel.
So it's purely the length that makes it a novella?
It's the length, yeah. 90, I think it's at 90 to 120 pages or something. I think mine's about 90, I think. No, it's shorter than that. Anyway. So it's too long for a short story. You know, I think at first I thought maybe it was a short story, but then it went on and on and on. And I did some flashbacks. The second part I'm going to read is a flashback, talks about how they got together when things were decent.
Well, before we hear that, I wanted to ask you, you told us what inspired the novella, but why was it important for you to write it?
I don't know. I just got all excited and sat down and started writing it. I don't know. And the further I got with it, I had a lot of fun with it because he was a professor and she's a librarian. I brought in a whole lot of literary stuff, and I just had so much fun. Yeah, I don't know. I just got really excited and wanted to write it. And once I got into it, I just kept going until it was over. It's hard to say. I don't know. It wasn't some huge thing that got me going on it. But once I was writing, I just kept going.
Now you had your launch at Let's Talk Books on April 7th. Are you going to do any more public readings in the near future?
Yeah, I'm hoping to. I've got more gigs coming up. Somebody from the library got in touch with me, and there's this spring thing on at the library this weekend, and I'm going to be selling my books there, and then at the Waterfront Festival. And then in the fall, I'm going to be going up to this camp again. I went last year, and I'll be giving a reading. I'll be reading from the novella there, but I'm hoping to get some more readings. I just haven't done a huge amount of working on it.
Yeah. Well, perhaps you'd like to read a bit more for us now?
Okay, this part's a bit more cheery. It wasn't until late that fall, when she was fully immersed in courses at UBC Library School, that she was called into the reception office and handed a sealed envelope by the secretary. "Someone who must want to get in touch with you," the woman said, smiling. "Your alma mater insignia on the envelope?" and nodded, wondering who it could possibly be. She took the envelope and hurried out, sitting on the nearest bench to read the letter. Professor Dexter had tracked her down to the university office and wondered if he could take her out to dinner. She put the letter down flabbergasted. Dinner with Professor Dexter? What would they talk about? She was no longer an English major. Many of her courses were boring and geared to library administration. She read on. He had a meeting at her university in 2 weeks and didn't have to teach until the next day. Back in her apartment, she called the number he provided, leaving a message on his answering service. His phone message was abrupt and to the point. So like him, she thought, hanging up. This should be interesting. Meeting him again was as if no time had lapsed, like a brief pause between sentences. Anne, he said, taking her hand in both of his, I'm so pleased you agreed to this. They were on the steps of the library early evening, a scented breeze blowing from somewhere. I'm sure you're busy with all your courses. A surprise hearing from you, Anne began, leaving her hand in his a moment longer than he should have, feeling red rising up her pale neck, like a damn teenager, she thought, pulling away to flip her hair forward, hoping it didn't show. You must call me Harold, he said, gesturing down the steps. My car is close by and I've booked us into a small place, a favorite of mine. She nodded and they walked in silence. She could think of nothing to say, and he obviously didn't think conversation necessary. The restaurant was elegant and not the kind she would have gone to with any of her university friends. They sat in a secluded spot on a large covered porch that overlooked the ocean, the sun orange and brimming its last rays into the distant horizon. As it was midweek and past tourist season, only one other couple was there when they arrived, and by the time they finished their entree, they were alone. Once the light lessened, the waitress came with two candles, their flames highlighting the silver cutlery and the better-than-average restaurant china. Anne basked in the elegance of it all and wondered what the evening had in store. Their conversation turned out to be typically professor-student driven, he asking specific questions, she answering, her courses, profs, several of whom he knew, how she compared this to the university of her alma mater. And your plans after graduation? I haven't given it much thought yet. A PhD program, perhaps. No, I've had enough of school after these next two semesters. I'll start applying for library jobs, I suppose. Maybe travel a little. He said nothing and stared out the window. She wondered if he thought her unambitious but felt flattered he had suggested post-grad work. Afterward, they drove to her apartment and walking her up the outside stairs to her door, bid her a courteous good night. He didn't mention another meeting or comment positively about their extended table discussion. Well, she thought to herself as she locked the door and took off her shoes, I guess that was that, until he called again. Even though it was over a three-hour drive between campuses, he insisted on meeting her once a month that fall and winter, late Friday afternoons, saying he liked the ferry ride over and it gave him a chance to read and make notes for the next week's classes. They would have dinner and then discuss literary and academic points long into the night, in cafes, on park benches, and eventually in her small apartment. She wondered if he would want to bed her, and decided after several sleepless nights going over the pros and cons that she would go for it, that he obviously wanted her in his life, and even though he didn't say so, that would be worth it. She made sure her sheets were always clean on the days when they were meeting, even made a conscious effort at flirting, but with no experience and less confidence, she was sure he didn't notice. One rainy spring evening, after a more sumptuous dinner than usual, he ordered champagne, and insisted they toast to her future, her becoming a librarian, and finally to her as the most beautiful and intelligent woman he had ever met. She balked at this last toast, held her glass at bay, staring hard at him. Did he mean he loved her? Was he leading up to something? I'm stopping there.
I wonder what he's leading up to. Well, thank you, Linda, for coming in today and talking with us on Zoom about your newly published novella, Heads I Win, Tails You Lose. Where can our listeners buy your books? Not just the novella, but all your books.
Well, the local bookstores, Let's Talk Books and Furby Books and Lighthouse Books in Brighton. And I think most of them are on the Amazon as well. You can buy them for me.
And listeners, if you'd like to contact us here at Word on the Hills, please send your comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, wordonthehills.com. Here you'll find all the broadcasts archived, and you can listen to them at any time. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning into the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week at 1 p.m. on Sunday on 89.7 Truly Local Radio.